After Show on Sports FM 90 The Fan. I'm host Tim Liu, joined by producer and co-host Alex Wong. Alex, we got a couple of shout-outs we got to get to up top, because we were at Korean Village last night, and great service, courtesy of our man.
Yeah, shouts to Jason Lee at Korean Village Restaurant. Huge Raptors fan, day one Raptors fan. We were reminiscing about Damon Stoudemire, about A.C. Earl.
You guys were talking about somebody named Carlos Rogers, which I was not sure. I thought that was an intersection near where I live, but anyway.
About Carlos Rogers, but no, it was great hospitality last night. We went out for dinner with Lebon Osman of the Toronto Star, who was on the show last week. Great Delano Banton profile that everybody, if you still haven't checked out, should definitely check out. And Evie Kwong from the Toronto Star. So Lebon showed us his Uber Eats app.
Yeah.
And you can verify this as I'm saying this.
Yeah.
We were scrolling through it, and this man orders Papa John's 4 days a week.
Hey.
And his special order is a $15 cheese pizza. And this is probably walking distance for him, but he says, I like it delivered. So he's a fast food guy. I'm setting the context because we went to eat Korean food last night, and it was his first time using chopsticks, and you tried to give him a lesson on it, and it didn't turn out too well.
No, it didn't, man. I mean, first off, he didn't break the chopsticks out top. Then he used the back of the chopsticks. You know how the back is a little thicker because it's like connected the wood part. Put that straight into the rice. I was lost. But it was a good time, man.
No, it's
you
good
hungover
time.
At all? No.
No, I'm okay. I'm superhuman.
Okay.
I'm still relatively young, so there's no really, you know, I can recover pretty well.
All right, fair enough.
Anyways, speaking of bowls, Korean bowls, the Nate Bjergren Bowl is tonight.
Oh, my God.
The Toronto Raptors are at home once again, continuing their homestand against the Indiana Pacers.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my suggestion.
Yes.
Nick Nurse should let Nate Bjergren be the head coach tonight. Thoughts?
It'd be pretty hilarious if you did. I mean, he's not.
Why not? Let your friend have his revenge game.
I mean, you know, it would be pretty funny. I do wonder if some members of the Indiana Pacers are more excited than usual to play this game. I understand that some of the reporting around Nate Bjorkman was not friendly last year. And as always, the Indiana Pacers did not make any significant trades or moves, so that same team is still there. So I do actually truly wonder if there's some animosity. But giving Nate a whole game, you know, is that fair to the other assistant coaches?
Now you want to spread the wealth? You want to make sure every assistant coach gets touches?
Earl Watson's got a coach against Phoenix, and when the Raptors play Perth in preseason next year in Australia, they got to have Trevor Gleason get his touch. Come on, man.
I'm just saying. It would just be entertainment. I think the NBA should allow things like this to happen. Just revenge games.
They should. Are you saying that a regular Raptors-Pacers Wednesday game is not entertaining enough?
No,
you need to add elements to it?
No, it's definitely getting the juices flowing. I'm so excited.
No, I'm pumped for tonight's game.
I'm pumped because I need the Raptors to get back to 500.
Yeah, actually,
I think as much as we talk about, and I think you had a really good conversation yesterday with Blake about all the early season takeaways, it's fun to look at the things that they're getting better at, the things that they can still improve on, but I would like them to do that while still winning some games. I don't want a 2-10 start like last year, is all I'm saying.
No, I don't. I don't think anybody wants a... No, it was 2-8, man. Come on.
Oh,
it wasn't that bad.
Sorry, tacked on two more. My apologies to Alex Len.
Yeah, well, you know, he got out of the rotation faster than any Raptor, really, except for Chris Boucher this year. Last year was tough. I mean, look, I don't think they'll start at 2-8. I actually am thinking about the games and sort of rewatching some of them, and I was thinking, like, there's not a good reason why the Raptors are 1-3. Like, there really shouldn't be. I mean, first off, like, their defense has been really good. Good to the point where I'm like, okay, there are some lapses. You know, you see a couple of breakdowns. But that's just sort of standard throughout the course of a game. The rebounding is a lot better defensively. Offensive rebounding, they're one of the top teams in the league right now. Obviously, that Celtics game really helped when it's a four-game sample. They're just getting a lot of good shots, and they're just missing close shots. So I really do feel like if there is a regression candidate, especially only four games within the season, I feel like the Raptors are kind of primed for that. Like, I think their style of play is going to work once they make more of their transition opportunities, more of their layups. And that's why I'm encouraged. I continue to be very encouraged by this team, even though, you know, they're 1-3, but you see reinforcements coming in with Pascal and Yuta returning to practice. So that'll be fun. But I just think more than anything else, like, the team itself has played hard, worked hard, and to me, it looks more like what you would associate with the traditional Raptors style of play that has worked in the last, like, 5-6 years than it did last season. Last season was like, okay, this clearly just isn't it. And this year, for me, I'm watching it, and I'm like, you know what? Like, they're pretty unlucky at the moment.
I'm with you. I think, you know, we joked last year, Matt Devlin would shout, the Raptors are right there.
Oh, yeah.
In the last 2 minutes, because the Raptors would be within about 7 to 10 points with 2 minutes left of every game. And they have fallen into a similar pattern so far this season in the games. But I feel like this year, that is not the ceiling of the team, but the floor. I feel like last year, at some points, it did feel like the best they could do was have these comebacks in the fourth quarter, play really well for stretches. Because listen, so far this season, the Raptors have looked great whenever they've been down by 20 points, is all I'm saying. But otherwise...
Wow, what are you really saying when you say that? You know?
Okay, here's my question for you. Don't you think, though, that the half-court offense and the way that they've struggled, don't you think that's just going to hamper them throughout the season?
Yeah, that will. But, I mean, like, if they had as good of a defense as they have right now, and they also had a really good offense, like, they would just be a 50-win team, and we wouldn't really question it, really. But we clearly know that the offense is going to be a struggle for this team.
And but how good can the offense get, you think? When you combine, like, half-court, and I know you talked about transition as well, they've really been a terrible transition team so far. Even if that gets cleaned up, like, what do you think is, like, the ceiling of this team offensively?
Like, league average, 15th offensive rating, you know, something like that.
And then have maybe a top five defense. That's a good combination, right?
Yeah, I think they're 7th right now. Of course, this is so early in the season, so things are going to change game by game. But, yeah, I mean, I think that is the path to success for this team. And I still think that, for me, they're doing the hard things well, and then the easier things they're leaving on the table. And I think that's where you feel encouraged, because if they were losing because they can't do the hard things well, like playing defense, creating deflections, generating turnovers, going the other way, if they can't do that, then I'd be really worried, because I'm like, that's the only thing you should be able to do is play great defense. And they have done that. So offensively, just got to make layups. I don't know what else to say. If I, you know, you say with me, you know, every game, you and me, and I know you up there with, like, you know, your pregame meal, my pregame meal, we're watching the game. And then throughout the course of the game, I get increasingly agitated, you know. And it's usually the missed layups that are killing me. And I was listening to Nick Nurse's pregame or practice interview the other day. He was going through the film, and he's like, look, I went through the film, and we compiled all the transition opportunities that we missed. And I know Nick was probably having the same reaction as me up there in the booth, just being like, yo, this is unacceptable, really. You can't be blowing 2-on-1 fast breaks, 3-on-1 fast breaks. And that's something that just will not repeat itself. I'm confident of that. Like, I know the quality of NBA basketball is at a point where 2-on-1 fast breaks are almost guaranteed baskets. And I know that the Raptors can get there. And honestly, when you do convert those, that's enough points to flip a lot of games here. Because they're literally losing games because they're keeping points on the table. Like, the other game, you and I were sitting together watching the Bulls game. And there was that play that OG had where they should have been giving him continuation for the and one. Instead, the referee decided to give him a side out. No basket and no free throw. And this is like maybe 4 minutes left in the fourth quarter. The Raptors were like making their comeback. And you're like, oh no, the game's over. They needed the basket. And then it came down to literally a one possession game. And I'm like, you know what? That's the thing. But that is realistically, as much as basketball is like so many elements, you're really only separating yourself by like 4 or 5 possessions a game. How well can you nail those things? And the Raptors have been really wasteful on that. And so, you know, on that front, I think the offense will improve just because you're going to be able to hit some of these transition plays. You're going to be able to make some more layups around the basket. Like, you know, it's not asking for a lot here.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a game, and maybe it's tonight, where they do fix the transition, and they make their layups. They have a good shooting game from three. And that should be enough.
Yeah.
That should be enough against teams like in Indiana, like in Orlando, that's coming in on Friday.
Oh, man. I can't wait to enjoy Raptors magic from the comfort of my own home.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Yeah, Will has already opted out of going to the arena
on
Friday. Will is on the Kawhi Leonard plan here at Sportsnet. You know, when he wants to take a day off, he takes a day off. When he sees a $50 flight from Flair Airlines, he just goes.
Hey.
And I'm left here hanging, you know? So
yeah.
I'm here just sitting here eating my Papa John's cheese pizza. How big of an impact do you think Utah will have when he comes back? Because people seem to be pretty excited about what he can bring to the team.
I mean, I think he's going to give the Raptors more options defensively. Because oddly enough, for a team that is completely filled with forwards who are 6'8", I feel like they're one forward short. In the sense that, so right now what I see from the bench is that offensively, the guys, some guys are underperforming, right? Like Goran Dragic is underperforming.
Some guys. All the guys. Who is our second unit right now? Tell me right now. Double agent Goran Dragic, who you continue to think is tampering with the Dallas
I'm
Mavericks.
I'm just saying, man. Until I see that man crack 10 points, I'm going to keep mentioning the fact that he talked to every single Mavericks.
Zvi's turned into Dasani water ever since he got the nickname.
Yeah. I mean,
who else is around? Chris Boucher got called out. He's in the doghouse right now.
He's in the doghouse.
Malachi Flynn was getting shots up like Kyle Lowry after game one against the Miami Heat in the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. That was tough. It was just me and Malachi in the gym at that hour, you know?
But who?
You were long gone.
Who from the second unit is contributing right now?
Yeah, it's fair. I think Kem. Kem has contributed. Sure. Okay. Come on. I understand that the Mavericks game, Luka was targeting Kem a little bit. But outside of that, I think Kem has been pretty solid.
But that's it, though.
But I think some of these guys will contribute. I mean, there's no way Goran's going to average like 5 points a game and shoot 10% from the field like all season.
I don't know, man.
No. You do know. Washed. You do know, okay? No.
Early returns have not been great.
Early returns have not been there at all. But the history here suggests that. I mean, he was like averaging like 15 points last year, you know.
Well, I love to be wrong.
Reasonably efficiently. Like, he's not just drop off to zero. Like,
I don't know, man. I love to be wrong. I'm sure Goran's going to have a huge game tonight after I say this.
I hope so.
Players get to a certain age, maybe they just fall off.
No. I mean, the only thing that concerns me is the huge wraps that he's wearing on his leg before the games. But I just assume that that's because he's 35, you know, like. It's no different from you, for example.
Wow. You think Utah will have a significant impact for the second unit?
I think actually Utah is going to be a player that's going to play both ways. Because one of the issues with the bench right now is I feel like there's like a lot of one-way play from the bench guys, right? Like Goran is supposed to be a one-way player in terms of the offense. Well, the offense hasn't been there, so he's been a zero-way player, okay? Svi is supposed to be a guy who gives you one-way production in terms of the offense. And then defensively, he's just been bad. We kind of expected that, but it's also a little jarring to see people driving him so easily and just back cut him and whatever. Offensively, he hasn't really given what he needs to give. So he's also at a zero-way player right now. Chris Boucher has also been at a zero-way play right now.
This is like, I know you've been rewatching The Wire.
What?
So you know the famous Marlowe scene when he's like, you think it's one way, but it's the other way.
Yeah.
Right now, the Raptors second unit is, you think we're one way, but it's zero way.
No, it's zero
is
way.
What you're saying.
It's zero way.
Did you just coin the phrase zero-way
players? Yeah, no, we have 3 zero-way players right now on the bench, which is a real issue because you need to at least be one-way. Right now it's just a dead end. It's like a parking lot. It's not one-way or two-way. I think Utah comes in and gives you – I know he's going to play defense off the bench. I think from what we saw in that one preseason game, which I know it's one preseason game, but like what we saw last season as well, Utah brings in incredible energy. And he guards really hard, and he plays fast, and he creates deflections. That fits the Raptors' style of play. I really want to see consistent level of defense come off the bench. Because, look, I'm not expecting the bench to even be great offensively, to even be good offensively, even when Goran is hitting his shots and hitting his stride, and Chris Boucher is out of the doghouse, and he's giving you his, you know, whatever he does. I think that the bench should be better defensively. Though. There's no reason why, given the amount of talent on the bench, that the guys can't guard better. So I do think that Utah coming back will help on that front. And that's something I'm going to talk to with Katie Heindel in the second half of the show. But really just do want to think about how this team is going to look like when it's complete, because soon it sounds like Pascal has gone into practice, been a full participant. Seems like he's ahead of schedule about, you know, he's supposed to be coming back about 2 weeks from now. But if he's already at practice, you know, working on stuff like that, I do think that that's probably a little bit closer than 2 weeks. Utah, we already know that we've seen him warm up and stuff like that. So I'm curious to see how he's going to look with the whole group and what the whole group's going to look like together. But I do think that there are certain guys on the bench right now that are just underproducing. And we saw that in the other game. Nick cut his rotation down to 8 guys already. And then after the game, when the day after, we're asking him, hey, you know, like, you know, what's Malachi got to do? And he's like, forget Malachi. What's Delano going to do? Because that's what I want to have on the team.
That's a tier 2 doghouse when he doesn't even answer a question about you and shifts the focus to another player.
Yeah, that's tough.
Can we get Delano in the first half, by the way? I love that Nick just pulls him in case of emergency in the third quarter for a massive Scotiabank Arena ovation. This is like when The Rock used to come out on Monday Night Raw.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you were
born. I'm following you so far. Yeah, I know the actor. Yeah.
The Rock would come out and... in every city that he was in, he would just say, finally, The Rock has come back to Toronto and just get like this huge ovation.
Really?
From any crowd. This is the Delano Banton effect. Comes in and gets a massive ovation.
Yeah, I actually do think that that is huge because the crowds, you know, because the Raptors haven't been very good at home. They're 0-3 so far at home. Delano coming in is, generally speaking, one of the highlights of the game, which I know sounds terrible, but it's true.
We don't want it to be a gimmicky thing because Delano is a real player.
Yeah, yeah.
I just want to see him play more, in all honesty. All jokes aside, like, why not? If you're going to play him sometimes, why not play him all the time?
Yeah, well, look, I'm also thinking if your offense is not going to be good off the bench realistically right now, then can you at least make your defense good? I think Delano, with his length and his size, does provide a lot of defense at that point guard position. He's a plus defender at the point guard spot. You put Utah in there, he's a plus defender in the whatever forward spot. Kem is a solid defender. He's going to be there. And then you just have Chris and, you know, either Svi or Goran. And, you know, I think Chris can be a pretty good defender half the time. And then you just really only have one guy off the bench that you got to hide a little bit. But if you have four good defenders and, you know, covering for one guy, I think you can do that. And I think that's ultimately where the bench is going to have to go.
I can't believe 4 games into the season where we already got these second unit issues. I thought they were addressed.
I know.
I thought they were addressed.
Well, on paper, they should be a lot better because Goran has been a successful bench player for a while.
Here, I've got some Goran Dragic stats.
You got stats? Wow, look at you.
Yeah, from an article written by Sportsnet's Michael Grange.
Okay.
Yeah, sourced. Yeah. He's shooting just 31.8% from the floor this season so far, 22.2% from three.
At that point, too, doing a lot of work there. Should have just rounded off.
We're rounding up. Both well below career marks, obviously. He's in his 15th season. I mean, he's playing about 15 minutes a game right now.
Yeah.
Not asking for much. We're not even asking for much, right?
Well, Nick's asking for less because he keeps dropping his minutes from game to game. He was in the starting lineup of game one. Then he was dropped from the starting lineup. Then his minutes just keep coming down more and more and more. And I think, look, Goran is good enough of a player that he's going to figure this out. There's no question about that. Like, he just generally is. I don't look at him, I'm like, he's that washed. He's not. He really isn't. Once he gets into the rhythm, I think one thing for Goran that's going to help, to have a big to play with, because you're 35, right? Like, he's not going to be able to just blow by guys, line drive one-on-one like he's Delano Banton. Like, Delano will just dribble around on the perimeter, handle up top, pretend like someone's going to, you know, make a cut on one side of the floor. He's going to, like, shift the pass over. And then he's like, no, I'm just going to drive. And he's going to blow by his guy one-on-one. You could do that when you're like 21, 22. When you're 35, you need a screen. And who on that second unit is screening for him? And then, you know, the way Goran is, he's very clever. So once he passes the ball, he knows that he's going to make another hard move to then either flare out to the perimeter and then catch the ball back for a three. Or he's going to turn, he's going to angle himself, and he's going to get himself downhill, and he's expecting the pass back. You need kind of like a give-and-go partner with him. And I think that's also been something that's been really hurting Goran, is that, like, you know, you think about him playing the second unit in Miami, you know, him playing with guys like Kelly Olynyk, for example, a really nice passer, a guy who can space the floor, just a very smart player, playing with Bam, running some pick and rolls with Bam, also a really smart player, really adaptive player, physical as well. And I just don't know. I mean, there's clearly not the same pick and roll chemistry with him and, you know, Chris Boucher or him and Ken Birch.
So Goran is the Will Liu, and he needs an Alex Wong, is what you're saying.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
All right.
And, you know, and if it's just me, if it's just me out there, it'll just be dry basketball.
It's not bad when it's just
hour.
You. I'm just trying to justify myself on this program every day, you know what I'm saying?
You don't do that, man. Come on.
No.
We know what you're here for. We'll see you tomorrow.
So do you think Kem will eventually make the starting lineup, or do you think Nick is just going to go with Precious as the starting center for the season?
Nick was asked about this. And he said, well, clearly Precious was starting because Kem was behind from training camp because he had COVID, which made total sense. And Precious was playing well in that role. To be honest, Precious is playing pretty well in that role. I mean, like, yes, you could swap him out with Kem. I don't know, like, how much that changes things for you specifically.
Kem finishes better at the basket so far.
He does.
But everybody's finishing better than Precious right now.
Yeah.
So far this season.
Yeah. I don't know.
But you think it's like interchangeable though, like Kem starting or Precious?
Yeah.
You don't see like a huge
difference? Well, I mean, I think there's a, stylistically, you guard a little bit better. Kem is more of a drop back kind of center. I think he can play on the perimeter as well, but I think he needs to be at full capacity to do that. And I'm still not sure if he's fully recovered from COVID to be able to do some of that stuff. I think Precious has done really well in terms of their switchability. He's rebounded the ball really well as well. So I'm happy with a lot of those things. I don't know if necessarily that Nick wants to do that just yet. And I think that's what Nick said. He said he could see the position at starting center being more fluid. But right now, I think he's pretty happy with what Precious is giving him. And I'm reasonably happy with what Precious is giving him, too, because I mean, this guy's giving a double-double from the center position. I understand that he leaves a few points on the table at the rim. I think those are things that he's going to work out. It really chalks up to inexperience for me, because what I see is that he rushes the shot a little bit sometimes, or is a little too eager sometimes, whereas Kem is so measured in terms of catch the ball around the basket, go up for a, traditional hook shot. There's not a lot of traditional in Precious's game, you know? So.
No, and I think the center position, it's the least of the Raptors' worries right now.
I think guards is more worry for me, because the other day I was thinking about it, and I was like, all right, so Fred played 43 minutes. That's a lot of minutes, man. Like, I think, you know, we should get that number down, and I'm sure Nick would agree. Then I was like, all right, so what are his options here? Malachi? Well, Malachi's in the doghouse. You might say, okay, Malachi shouldn't be in the doghouse, but he is in the doghouse right now, okay?
We need a doghouse-sponsored segment, because Nick Nurse will keep us going on that all season.
Oh, Nick is always going to have somebody in there. And Nick just doesn't keep a guy in the doghouse. He'll tell people, hey, he's in the doghouse. Just to be clear, he's there. He'll change their address and whatever. He'll do like a mail forwarding system to the doghouse.
Nick Nurse is great for content. That's all I got to say.
Name me
another head coach in the NBA right now that gives consistent content like Nick Nurse.
Yeah, no, it's tough. I mean, you'd have to find special cases like Doc Rivers, who just like loves to backstab his own players. I mean, I don't think Nick is backstabbing anybody. I think he's being pretty clear about what he wants. And then
I think Nick is just such an interesting personality for an NBA head coach.
He does have a lot of dip on his chip.
Coaching the Raptors, he treats it exactly like when he was coaching the London Towers.
Yeah.
Like it's no different.
No, you're looking at a man who.
Yeah. I'm a noted Nick Nurse stan.
I think you and I are both on that side. And I don't think Nick is like immune to criticism, but I think going back to his options at guard, it's like, okay, so Fred played 43 minutes. You want to bring that down. We play Goran more. Well, Goran's not playing well. Okay, then Delano. Well, Delano is like a nice change of pace player, but he has clear flaws in his game right now that is going to inhibit him from playing that many minutes. That being said, I don't mind seeing him play more. I think he contributes on defense in a way that most guards don't. And then it's like, okay, well, who's going to be there? A shooting guard. Well, Gary's going to start. That's cool. I like Gary starting. It's fine, right? He makes the shots. He doesn't miss the shots, but his defense is good right now. It's fine. Gary starts. Then who's going to be the backup for Gary? Well, Svi's been bad. Let's be real. Svi has just been bad. I don't know why he keeps driving so hard into the paint and then having to jump to make a pass. It's stressing me out because he's not blowing by anybody. He's just jumping. That's not it. That's not a move. So you can't really play him that much there. And then who are your other options at shooting guard? Like, name one other shooting guard on the team.
Delano Banton?
He's not a shooting guard. He can't shoot. No offense to Delano, but he can't shoot right now. So he's not a shooting guard. Do you want to play Malachi as shooting guard, I guess? I mean,
I would like to see Malachi play.
Yeah.
People are going to be asking for Malachi, and then he's going to come out and shoot 0-for-3, and then that'll be the end of the conversation. This is what happens, though.
This is exactly what happens.
This is exactly what happens, and the story moves on. So the Fred minutes, again, from Michael Grange's article. Check out all his work at Sportsnet. Fred is averaging 38.5 minutes so far this season, which
that's a lot of minutes.
A year ago he finished second in the NBA at 36.5 minutes. It's tough when you're grinding for a win like the first week of the season and you have to be playing him this much.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I hear you. And look, I think that's where some of the other guards got to step up, but there is a lack of depth on the team at the guard positions, which is kind of what happens when you build your team to be full of forwards. So I think that's a good spot for us to take a break. When we come back, I'll be joined by a friend of the program, Katie Heindel. I'm your host, William Liu. You're listening to The Raptor Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Welcome back to The Raptor Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm your host, William Liu, and I'm joined by one of my favorites, Katie Heindel, who writes for Dime, Up Rocks, Yahoo Sports, Complex, many other places, too many to list. She also runs the Basketball Feelings newsletter, which you can subscribe to on basketballfeelings.substack.com. Katie, how you doing?
I'm good, Will, but I have to say, it's basketballfeelings.com now.
Oh, my God. This is... I'm going to blame Alex because he writes all my intros
it's okay.
and outros.
Breaking news. Yeah.
But, damn. Wow.
Thank you for having me.
Already been betrayed. No, thank you for coming on. So first off, we wanted to do a bit of a vibe check with you on the team because I think that that is important. But we'll get to that after we get to some very important Raptor questions. I think so far, so we've seen the Raptors play roughly about a week and a half. In the first four games here, which Raptor has impressed you the most during this first week of play?
Delano, 100%.
Delano.
Yes. Okay. I mean, I know it's a small sample size in an already extremely small sample size, but like as an anytime energy guy, you just sub this guy in the game when the game is slumping. I think it's a good move for the rest of the season. When he came in on Monday night, like he got a standing ovation. Raptors cut the lead to 10, but like I think jokes aside also, he just completely wants it. Like when he gets on the floor, he's doing everything and anything he can. So it's also just like a joy to watch him.
It has been a joy to watch him. Obviously, the debut is kind of unforgettable, really. The only thing I remember from that actual Raptors-Wizards game, which was otherwise a little dull. I mean, Nick talked about it yesterday when he was asked, hey, why isn't Malachi playing? He says, you shouldn't ask me about Malachi. You should ask me about Delano. He's the one that should be getting more minutes. I mean, it's funny when he says something like that because obviously he is the one that determines the minutes. But what do you think it'll take for Delano to crack Nick's rotation to the point where he's not necessarily – just like, okay, the game's dead and there's like, you know, you're down 20 in the third quarter. Let's go to Delano and see if he can spark us here. How does he get into the rotation consistently?
Yeah, I think like now he's getting what, like a solid 5 maybe per game or maybe for like 2 out of 4 games, which is great. But I think he's just got to keep doing everything and anything he can. Like I said before, you know, like they are leading with their defense right now, and he's a player who's putting on defensive pressure at all times. You know, like he's constantly reaching in and around guys and trying to swat the ball and like snatch it away using these like long octopus arms of his. Like his length is everywhere. And I think just continue to use that because, well, you make a great point. It is Nick who has to decide these things. He's also shown that, like, even if he's just getting 5 minutes a game, they're really valuable minutes to him, and he's making the most of those reps. So, I assume he'll be back and forth with the 905 and with the team, but it might be a situation, you know, we go back and think of, like, when Pascal was kind of shuttling between the two teams, and he just started to see more time on the floor with the Raptors because he's what the team needed then. And, you know, similarly, with Banton, I think right now he's shown that we're still going to get in these third, fourth quarter slumps, and he can make the most as an energy guy right now. I don't think he should stay that way because he offers a lot more than that, but if that's what the team needs from him and if that's what Nick's seen in him, he's just got to keep that up.
Yeah, I mean, I like the fact that he can drive to the rim. He's really quick for a guy his size, and defensively he's definitely a plus. I think if, especially because we saw Nick try to do it a little bit in the Chicago game, I don't think it was that successful, but he tried to go with like a no point guard lineup, like no Fred, no Malachi, no Goran. And in those lineups, Delano should be, you know, a core piece of that specific lineup, which is not going to play that long, I don't think. But, you know, at 6'9", I still think he does bring a level of organization to the offense. Like, I think there's a certain savvy in which he's able to set up the play at the top of the floor. He's been pretty effective from that front, don't you think?
Yeah, I do. And if Nick's going to go with these, like, free-flow lineups, there's, like, no more of a free-flowing, again, octopus arm energy style player than Delano, I think. And just, like, you know, I'm making jokes, but I think the fluidity that he's playing with, the pressure that you're talking about, his reads are getting better. I mean, that is something I'm also seeing team-wide. I think it's going to maybe happen slower than some people are comfortable with or want to see, but the reads are getting better every single game. You know, the confidence isn't quite there yet, but I think we're also seeing some patience in players like Delano, Scotty Barnes, and that's going to count just as much.
Yeah, and I think the one thing that's one of the key stats to watch for with Delano and how many minutes he plays is sort of how much he turns the ball over. And so far, and this is, again, 29 minutes he's played in his career, only one turnover so far, which is a huge, huge development. If you can keep it like that, if you can keep to one turnover per 30 minutes, essentially, that is going to allow him to be on the floor a lot more. On the flip side of the coin, who has been disappointing to you in the first week or so with the Raptors?
I feel rough saying, picking anyone because, again, the sample size is really small. But I have to say I did expect more from Dragic than kind of what he's showing. Like, he's shooting 31% from the floor. And it's to a point now where, you know, he's there to buffer some of Fred's minutes. And if Fred's playing upwards of 43 minutes per game, which isn't sustainable, he's getting kind of beat up. As Nurse said the other night, you know, he's ping-ponging around the floor. He's getting a lot of contact. It's clearly noticeable. You know, Dragic should be there to come in when Fred needs a breather, but, like, it's hard to trust Dragic because it's almost as if he hasn't hit his stride yet. But mm-hmm. my expectation of a player, like a veteran player, like Dragic, would be that he doesn't need time to hit his stride in the same way, you know, that you would anticipate from a team that's mostly young and entirely new guys, not just to the team, but, like, to the league. So it's been a bit frustrating to watch him also, I think, just handle the ball constantly. Like, there's been this problem in, like, late clock situations where, you know, usually we love ball movement with the Raptors because it's so generative, I think, of offensive energy. But, like, they're just swinging it around. He won't stop dribbling. It's just like someone needs to deliberate and take the shot. And that's what I actually thought I was going to see from Dragic.
Yeah, absolutely. First off, to your point about a veteran being able to turn it on or not, I mean, I didn't think I saw much of him in preseason, but at the same time, I was like, look, this is a 35-year-old in preseason. Like, he's clearly knows what to do in this league. I trust him, right? In the same way that I trusted, remember when Kyle would, like, basically skip all of preseason and then come back for one game and drop 30, and I'm like, okay, yeah, so Kyle's ready. This is all good. I understand Kyle and Goran is very different. Don't want to even compare the two, really. It's sacrilegious. But at the same time, I kind of expected that same effect where he's able to turn it on and off. And he just hasn't been able to turn it on. I mean, first off, actually, Goran's usage has been strange to me because this first game of the season and all of preseason, Goran was starting. What did you think Nick wanted to do with that in terms of why did he even start the first game?
I don't know, because I don't actually think it's a measure of, like, a veteran respect thing, because I don't think Nick Nurse necessarily sets his lineups like that. I also don't think the team is structured like that right now that matters, because there's going to be so much necessary fluidity, I think, in the starting lineup for a long time. Like, I do not think they're going to be set. So my only thought was that he maybe wanted him to try and settle the lineup.
Right.
But then again, like, a lot of the guys that were alongside him, I wouldn't think kind of needed settling. That's what I'd like to see more of him from coming off the bench. I don't know. It's still, I mean, I'm not also trying to get too hung up on the rotations because, as I said before, at this point, I think everything is in flux.
Yeah, that's fair. In terms of the style of the team and their identity, I mean, Nick was very clear in terms of how he outlined his vision for this club in training camp and preseason. Obviously, I think the front office has been incredibly intentional in the way they've constructed their team, obviously with so many forwards, this aim to play positionless, play in transition, guys being able to play multiple positions. Have you seen that style of play crystallize so far in the first week or so?
I mean, I think defensively, you know, they've shown they're a really good defensive team. I think that's also kind of, it's given me like a big sigh of relief considering how they were playing in Tampa as this team that came out to start that season and said, we're going to be this juggernaut on defense. And they were terrible. Defensively, I mean, everything was terrible, but it was strange to see them struggle in that sense. But now, you know, I think they're like fifth in steals, they have seventh defensive rating overall, sixth in turnovers forced, which is great. So I think that we're seeing that part culminate and come together. So that is positive to me. That is crystallizing. I mean, we talked a little bit about it, but offensively, they're not as great. And I don't think that vision has necessarily crystallized just yet.
Yeah, well, actually, the offensive vision for this club was always a little more confusing to me because I knew exactly what they wanted to do defensively, and I think they've done that well. If anything, they've actually had to do less doubling than in previous years because there's less just outright players getting beat and needing a lot of help. Mm-hmm. I think that has helped them limit in terms of the number of open three-point attempts they're giving up, or they're not having to play as much zone, and the rebounding's improving. I think all that is good. Defensively, I see lots of great signs. But offensively, the vision there, I mean, What is it? Katie, what is it? Please explain the Raptors offense to me. I'm so confused every time I go to the game and I'm like, what are you guys doing?
I'm with you, but I wonder sometimes if it's just too overwhelmed. you know, like out length and out muscle and potentially overwhelm. But I think the backfiring sometimes is they tend to be overwhelming themselves in that sense. Because when you have a team like this that you, I guess the ultimate goal is for them to play extremely fluidly, positionless as possible, then you want that. And you want the length everywhere. And, you know, I think this was something that even at Summer League, like, was being preached of, like, Banton and Barnes, like, use your length, use your strength, like, play to your own assets. Like, those are physical capabilities that are just, you know, innate to you. No one can kind of come at you with that stuff. But there needs to be more organization, I think, generally, offensively. And then I think the scheme could work. But sometimes it just looks like a mess of arms and legs and, like, wild passes. When you see poor Fred, like, missing a pass because he's just, like, they're getting flung from a height that he is just not at. But at the same time, it's like, you got to adjust. You've got to adjust for your point guard. And you got to adjust for the guy that you want organizing the floor. So, yeah, maybe some settling, maybe some organization. And then I think the offensive vision of, I mean, would it be fair to say the offensive vision is chaos? Organized chaos.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. So it makes sense to me to be intentional in creating chaos defensively, because that screws up the other team's flow and they turn it over. Intentionally being chaotic offensively is not something I heard before. You know, like, generally speaking, people want to be like pretty, like, hey, this is what we're doing each time down, have a plan. But it's kind of almost the opposite. I think two people who will bring some level of stability to the offense, I think, will be Yuta Watanabe and Pascal Siakam, who are thankfully returning back to practice following their injuries. Yuta has been shooting around the last few games and warming up. And apparently he's down at the 905 today, getting some reps in. Pascal has been a full participant at practice. Let's start with Pascal. Obviously, he's the more important player here. But how much do you think Pascal's return is going to impact this team in terms of how does it put other players into a more natural spot?
I think it's going to gel more the problems that we're seeing with shooting and that kind of deliberation I was talking about. And I think it might gel in the sense that it might catch a lot of guys up to speed more quickly. Because right now you've got, like, I think some of the problem is that, you know, Fred is used to passing where he thinks guys should be.
Right.
And, like, that's where some of the, like, disruption and turnovers are happening on court. You know, it's not a bad leadership tactic because, fine, like, eventually you have to hope they'll get there. But when he's got Pascal back on the court to work with him and to kind of funnel things between them to the other guys, I think that will help innately with the organization. I don't think I'm 100% believer that the problems with shooting and, like, around the midcourt will be immediately fixed when those two get back, like, and get back into the rotation. But if anything, I would expect to see almost an immediate balancing.
Yeah, I think, look, I mean, how many players on the Raptors right now impact the rim consistently? And I think Fred is doing his very best. You know, bless his heart. Fred was working so hard in that Chicago game. I couldn't believe that last three didn't drop for him. He was working so incredibly hard. I think Pascal's going to really help on that front. I think OG sort of setting up shop in the post in the meantime has been really nice. I like that look. I think Scotty can definitely impact the rim. It's mostly just him being able to recognize when to attack because I think he just needs to do more of it in general. And Nick has pointed that out. So I think, though, defensively, even though the Raptors have been pretty good, I think they get to another level here with having two more really strong, really just defensively solid wings between Pascal and Yuta. Do you see another level for the Raptors, or do you see sort of having two more wings in the lineup being able to unlock a few more options defensively, or even just like just if they can get to another level intensity-wise? Because obviously a lot of defense is just how hard you play, and these two guys play really hard.
I think I definitely think it's playing hard, getting to that other level. I also think there's kind of an IQ that's perhaps lacking, you know, and that you'll get back with those two. I mean, even Yuta, I think, like, his reads on the floor are sort of night and day sometimes, you know, like, ahead of the newer guys. And, like, that's been a great, like, that was, like, a great surprise to see from him that, like, and toward the end of last season, but just like where he is at with that kind of stuff, like it's I think leaps and bounds of where you might anticipate. And then again, like Pascal coming back and just like knowing where to be to not kind of get, because right now there's a lot of like getting in each other's way.
Yeah.
Like even like around the rim, like up around the glass, like it's kind of, it's not ideal. It's like not an ideal usage of personnel and energy, because as you said, like that physicality, it is sometimes a matter of who wants it most, but it's also gonna like, it's gonna take a toll on these guys as they continue. So I think what we've seen, I would like to compare it to like what we've seen with OG, especially in that Bulls game, just like really being and looking so strong and just kind of unstoppable and like leaning into the contact. I think that Pascal can do the same when he comes back, and that's also simultaneously after the last season something I would love to see from Pascal. You know, we saw how joyful he was, and I want to believe that's going to carry through to his gameplay. But like that confidence too, of just knowing and recognizing he's back in the city, he's kind of like back in a way to not square one in terms of his gameplay, but like a fresh start. And like he can bring to that, he can like fold into that all this kind of new confidence and strength, because I think also you're going to take a lot of teams by surprise, right?
Yeah.
When you add that too.
Yeah, for sure. And this goes back to the comments that some of the comments that Pascal made during the offseason, where, you know, he's like, look, I just, the conversation has been had now that this is my team, that this is sort of like his responsibility to lead. And I mean, obviously we haven't seen it on the floor just yet, but even just seeing his attitude around like sitting on the bench, he's always up there. He's with the team, obviously he's cheering, and he's, you know, one of the first players up all the time off the bench. That is important to me. Of course, you know, we're talking about a man who's making the max, and we need him obviously to cheer, but also we need him to be on the floor and be really good. But I think his attitude, I think his just his spirit looks a lot higher, which does bring me to the vibe check around this team. So I gotta get the vibe check from you about Nick Nurse right now, because Nick, I don't know if he's like, he's ornery, because he's really not an ornery guy. He's generally speaking very laid back and smiley and, you know, very thoughtful with his answers. And, you know, and I think us as reporters, we appreciate that. But the way Nick has been upset with two players in particular, Malachi and Chris Boucher, what's your vibe check so far on Nick Nurse?
I gotta say, I was kind of surprised. I was surprised with like how explicit he was about Boucher, because I really didn't think, you're talking about one game in like, at that point was like a string of three games, you know, like that, unless he's seen, and of course, like he is seeing things we are not, like he's seeing things in practice, like he's seeing things in shoot around, like obviously that we don't get the full view of. But I mean, I didn't think Boucher looked that bad. Like I didn't think he looked a little bit lost, but again, like that was kind of part and parcel with whole how the team kind of looked at times.
Yeah.
So for the frustrations to land squarely on Boucher's shoulders, I didn't agree with that necessarily. The stuff about Malachi, I didn't read as explicitly into it as I think a lot of other people seem to, you know, of like two guys being ahead of him in the rotation. I think, unfortunately, what I think is happening with Malachi is kind of a catch-22. Like he needs more reps, but he's not yet trusted to like get those reps in games, but that's when he's going to improve. So I think honestly, just like time with the 905 is going to help him immensely, maybe. But if Nurse was waiting for that, then I don't necessarily see the need for those comments, because I also don't think these guys, you know, in seasons past when Nurse has made those comments, maybe it's been in a place where someone did kind of need a fire lit under them. And now you don't have Kyle in the locker room to get at guys, because Fred leads a lot differently. I just no doubt that he's getting at guys and telling them what the expectations are, but Kyle did it in a much different way, perhaps more explicitly at times, you know, and on the floor. So you don't have that, then maybe that's why he's doing it. Personally, I don't want to see it continue, because it feels like going, I mean, we all have a little PTSD from last season, but it does feel a little bit like going down that same path, you know, of like the darkness in Tampa. When things were all kind of coming to a boiling point, chemistry and like relationship wise. But I don't know, maybe it's just a spooky Halloween thing.
Well, speaking of spooky Halloween things, the other thing I needed a vibe check on was Scotty Barnes, who obviously the vibes are immaculate with Scotty at all times, period. Have you seen this new Scotty? So why is he already in a Halloween costume? I'm very confused. Halloween is not for another 4 days, but, so he had the whole Joker face.
Yeah. From my very limited intel/spying on Instagram. It looked like Scotty, Delano, Delano was like an inflatable octopus, which I personally loved. Scotty was a joker. Nick Nurse was at a Halloween party, but I can't say that he was in costume. So there must have been some party going on last night.
Okay.
I haven't seen the rest of the pictures. Look forward to those. Frankly, I was a little bit like, I'm just one of these people who's like, we can move past the Joker costume.
We
can and we should. But I think NBA players are just stubbornly never going to move past the Joker. It's like the go-to costume. So maybe it's like a right. You know, like he bit on DeMar's pump fake. He was a Joker for Halloween. It feels like an NBA rite of passage.
Yeah, well, I was going to say... you're right, because a shocking number of NBA players really, really resonated with the Joker, which I don't really see as the same consequence, you know? I mean, maybe people identified certain elements, but NBA players are definitely, by definition, not the Jokers, if you're just talking about the spirit of the character. But, yeah, it is a little strange to do a Halloween party on a Tuesday on the 26th of October.
Maybe they wanted to do it before... the road trip? I don't know. Maybe it was the first free night, but it seems very early. But it can give us hope that if there are Halloween parties to come, maybe Scotty switches it up into a more appropriate costume.
Yeah, and there you go. Fair enough. All right, Katie, thank you for coming on the program. Really appreciate it. I want to give you the space to plug what you've been doing so far, what's upcoming in terms of your projects. Obviously, I'm a big fan of your writing. Please let the listeners know where they can find you and all your stuff.
Oh, wow. Thank you. I'm so bad at this part. You already mentioned Basketball Feelings, and you can subscribe to that newsletter at basketballfeelings.com. I wrote a big feature on the Detroit Pistons, culture building, and the creative outlets that they have for their players. That's on Dime. And then you can listen to Dishes and Dimes, the podcast, and you can look for the rest of my work, as you very nicely mentioned off the top, at Dime, at Complex, at Yahoo. Yeah.
Everywhere.
All over.
Definitely highly recommend everything Katie writes and all the podcasts that she's on. So, Katie, thanks for joining us on the show today.
Thanks so much, Will. See you soon.
Speaking of soon, the Raptors play the Pacers tonight. Real quick, actually, Alex, because I wanted to ask you. So the Pacers are a pretty big team. They have the two centers in the middle there. How do you think we're going to do against them today, against Sabonis and Turner? Which Turner, by the way, had a 40-point game. It was a shock to me because I'm like, how do you not stop him for less than 40? But just real quick, how do you think the Raptors are going to do against the centers tonight?
Well, while you were talking to Katie, I was having a charcoal-infused crust Pizza Nova pizza.
I was going to say, your throat sounds infused right now.
So right now, I think the Raptors are going to win by 39 points tonight.
Why is this always your go-to number, man?
Because one of the times it's going to hit.
You're number 39 like Dwight Howard.
It's going to hit, and we're going to get to play the clip back.
Okay, sure.
That's my prediction. That's what you get for asking me for a prediction.
No, that's fair enough. I think it's going to be interesting to see the specific matchups they go with, because I think OG might end up guarding Sabonis, because he did a really good job with that last year. Remember that?
Maybe put Scotty on. I want to see Scotty on these guys.
Well, I think you're probably going to put pressures on Turner. That's a pretty good matchup for you. OG, I think just think OG's just strong enough to hold a guy like Sabonis. He did a pretty decent job. And then I think with Scotty, like, if you want him to free him up to help different places, that makes sense to me. So, look, Raptors-Pacers game tonight, it's going to be a good one. I hope you're right about the 39
points.
What's
your prediction?
My prediction is that Fred is going to play 45 minutes tonight because they're going to need it. So, that's it for the show today. You've been listening to The Raptor Show on Sports FM 90 The Fan. Make sure you find The Raptor Show wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe. Please rate and review our show. I'm your host, Wen Liu. Once again, producer and co-host Alex Wong, and to Katie Heindel. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.